Good morning, everybody, and thank you very much for taking the time to join us for our FY20 results presentation. This meeting is being recorded and will appear on our corporate website with the presentation a little bit later on this week. Hopefully, you've all been sent a copy of the presentation, so we'll be sort of calling out the slide numbers as we flick through the presentation. For those of you I've not met in person or indeed virtually before, my name is Steve Burns. I'm the Chief Exec and look forward to taking you through the highlights and lowlights of this very extraordinary year. We'll chat through our response to the pandemic and the operational progress we've made with a number of the new and established initiatives over the last 12 months. I'm joined by Laurence, our CFO. Laurence is going to run you through the detail behind the numbers, the cash mitigation initiatives we've undertaken. He'll also give an update on the property pipeline for the next 4 years and a brief summary and financial outlook. So turning to slide three, in terms of financial performance, whilst I'm sure that you've heard this from every other leisure business you've spoken to, the second half of FY20 really has been one that has offered up some significant challenge. Notwithstanding that, however, the processes that we put in place and the mitigating actions that we deployed helped us close out the year posting a profit after tax of 1.4 million, EBITDA of 14 million, a net debt position of just 8.7 with 20.8 million cash at bank and a further 11 million available to us that remains undrawn. Demand has been strong since the reopening, or certainly during the days that we've been allowed to reopen. We were also really pleased to open 4 new centres in the year and generated post the lockdown 1.0 like-for-like sales of 68% for August and September. So turning to slide four, pre-COVID, which is a new take on the acronym PC, our first half performance was excellent with 8.6% like-for-like revenue growth and free cash flow generation of 5.2 million. That cash generation was sadly put to work paying bills during the 21.3 weeks that we were closed from the 20th of March in 2020. When we were able to reopen, however, we had a really strong balance sheet, and that was in no small part due to the support of our shareholders that I'd like to take this opportunity to thank. A very healthy relationship with our landlords and key suppliers, and as I'll take you through a little bit later on in the presentation, a real unwavering focus on sales, service and safety superiority to try and make the most of the new very restrictive and constantly changing trading environments that we found ourselves in. On slide six, we just set out our COVID response, and actually over the next two slides, six and seven, the government lockdown measures, the timing of the events and how we as a business responded to them. One of the good things about running a business that can see very significant disruptions to trade due to extreme weather is our tried, tested and very well practiced ability to make significant changes to our operating model at short notice. As you can see from the timeline slides, we have certainly had to do that over the last 8 months, with constantly changing regulations, restrictions and changes by geographic region and country. Early planning ensured that the business was really well prepared with a closed down plan in advance of the national lockdown. Now that enabled us to react really quickly, save costs and put 98.6% of our team on furlough. The sector COVID secure reopening guidelines were actually proposed by us, working really closely with the other operators in the sector to ensure that these guidelines were robust enough to allow us to open in a safe way. And that was in part due to a real active engagement with the Department for DCMS, the customers and media to build support for the sector reopening when we were allowed to reopen our doors. Mid-August, the reopening with limited capacity was clearly quite painful, as well as having a real renewed focus on sales, service and safety superiority trading in the new environments. But the real agile and flexible approach that we applied to the new trading restrictions enabled us to make the most of the constantly changing localised and national lockdowns that we were faced with since reopening. We had some real excellent feedback on the Have Fun, Play Safe campaign and the COVID secure measures that we put in place from both our customers, the EHO and the many police spot checks that we had and continue to get. And also the new innovations that we've since put in place to ensure that we had lots more capacity ready and installed for the 3rd of December reopening after lockdown two. We also started working on the reopening campaigns and operational processes to ensure that we really did hit the ground running, as we lay out on slide 8. Really frustratingly, bowling fell between a number of different sectors. We were excluded from the hospitality list, the leisure centre categorisation, and then the recreational categories, due in no small part to the sort of lack of education of some politicians classing us as a sport. You know, the likes of trampoline, mini golf, go-karting, etc., were allowed to reopen, but bowling had to remain closed, which meant that we were one of the very last sectors given the go-ahead to reopen. We did lobby incredibly hard. We were sending thousands of letters to the local MPs. I spoke directly to Number 10 and the Department from DCMS, getting some traction, only to then have the opening date pushed back once again, devoid of any real evidence to back up any of the decisions that were being made. Now, I mean, I could rant about this for hours. It's probably not the best use of your time or mine. So if we focus on when we were able to reopen, actually, as the market leader, we were fortunate that a lot of the media guys came to us directly. We also proactively engaged with a lot of media and achieved some really extensive online and printed press, radio, TV coverage about the bowling sector reopening. Now, that gave us thousands of pounds worth of free publicity showcasing the COVID secure measures that we'd have put in place and our really accessible product. We are reopened, but in the early days we did have some real issues to contend with, certainly around capacity. And on slide 9, we just set out how we're managing capacity and reputation. The restrictions to our centre capacity and lane utilisation had an obvious and a really big impact on our business and our ability to generate revenue and profit, whilst going above and beyond on the customer safety measures and complying with the government guidelines. As you can see from the graph that's on that slide, in a normal trading environment, pre-COVID, our capacity is close to 50% during the quieter periods. When we've only got 50% of our lanes available to sell, and then the added restrictions to the opening hours, once the curfew was introduced in September, we had much more demand than we were able to serve, as customers came early in the day and just put significantly more pressure on those peak periods. We set about trialling various different mitigating factors during September so that we could safely open up more capacity. We trialled 3 different types of lane dividers and various techniques for ball identification before landing on the current strategy that we've rolled out across the entire estate. Now, whilst it has been expensive, and it's cost us over £1 million to put these measures in place, we did feel it was the most appropriate. And the feedback that we've had from both our customers and the enforcement officers that have come and seen the setup is fantastic. We bought a complete new set of balls that are very different from the original house balls and easy to identify. And you'll see a picture of them on the slide there. They look like footballs. One of the biggest issues is the sharing of equipment. And whilst the lane dividers will keep you safe when you're on an opposite lane to another customer, the balls are coming back down the same ball return for those 2 lanes. And so there was a potential for customers to be using and picking up each other's equipment. We tried various different ways to help make them easily identify, like putting stickers on them or marking the balls. But it didn't really work, especially for the younger children who were still then picking up other balls, and it was creating tension on the lanes. Which is why we took the decision to buy a whole new set of balls. Equally, the lane dividers were really carefully designed to look like they'd always been there, which gives you a really private, safe environment for your family, but doesn't make you feel like you're in a supermarket or a hospital. And now with effectively 100% lane capacity available to us, we're very well positioned to make the most of the demand when it does come back to us. You know, we've still got some restrictions on overall head capacity, but at least we can open up all the lanes. On slide 10, we just look at sales, service and safety superiority, and that's certainly always been the mantra for our business. We just clearly have to tweak our priorities. We have to be really dynamic in our approach to sales, getting the very delicate balance of yield, capacity and safety correct. We adjusted the dynamic pricing framework due to the reduced lane capacity, introduced midweek drivers and a whole suite of new offers to fall in line with the tier system restrictions on what we could offer and to whom within the very limited opening hours that we were available to trade. We've got a really sophisticated and well-proven CRM and digital campaign system, and our digital expertise really allowed us to react quickly to the market changes and the customer behaviour. We used some of the time that lockdown afforded us to overhaul the way that we measure service during the lockdown period, and that engaging with a new partner that's provided us with a much more holistic picture of the customer journey. The early results and feedback post-opening really were invaluable, helping us refine our offering and deliver a really memorable experience despite some very onerous conditions that were forced on, you know, what is by its very nature quite a tactile experience. We worked really hard with the department at DCMS prior to opening to have the protocols agreed for the sector and kept the dialogue open with them, with our primary authority and with all the local EHOs post-opening. And the new measures that I talked about earlier on, like the lane seating and the unique bowling balls, were trialled in collaboration with the local authorities and enforcement officers, and that's what has allowed us to safely open up more lanes and increase our capacity. We've had around about 50 enforcement interactions since we reopened our doors, with overwhelmingly positive feedback. It's not been without its challenges, however. Enforcing the use of masks and social distancing across a large demographic of people that come to our centres has been really tough for our teams. We introduced new conflict management training and we created a new COVID marshal role to help ease some of the pressure, as well as then bringing in cleaners during the daytime to make sure that we're cleaning down the balls and the lanes between each one of the games to ensure consistency.
Thanks, Steve. Now, onto slide 12, we just go through the start of the financial performance. It's just worth reminding everyone of our excellent half one financial performance, when we saw record half one revenues of 69.2 million, with like for likes at 8.6% for the half and 9.4% to the end of February 2020. EBITDA was up 2.4% to 21.6 million, including the initial hit in March of the COVID lockdown, which was worth £1.5 million. Operating profit margin was 27.5%, which was up 2.5 percentage points, and earnings per share was 7.68 pence per share for the first half. Now on slide 13, we look at the full year performance, and with the closure of 21.3 weeks in the financial year, and the trading with capacity restrictions, as Steve mentioned, which were only opened during August, we ended financial year 2020 with revenues of 79.5 million, EBITDA of 14 million, statutory operating profit margin of 12.4%, and an earnings per share of 0.9 pence per share. I'll now turn to slide 14 and just explain the cause and effect of each area of the P&L and the key drivers. Now, the income statement that you can see on slide 14 is shown on a pre-IFRS 16 basis to aid with comparatives. However, given the impacted weeks of closure, the comparatives are still very difficult to accomplish. We outlined the half one trading, and as we were only trading for 60% of the full year, the 79.5 million revenue and 0.4% like for like is a good result. Gross profit artificially low in the year by 20 basis points due to the write-off of product in line with the long lockdown period, netted off by some credits from suppliers. Absent this, gross profit would have been 85.7%, which is in line with the prior year. Admin expenses, pre-depreciation and amortization were down 59.5% during the lockdown months, leading to a total reduction of 26.2% in the full year. And corporate costs also saw a reduction of 27.4% in FY 2020, and that's despite our investments in technology and the other measures that Steve mentioned earlier to ensure a COVID secure environment when we reopened. Group adjusted EBITDA was 14 million, with the half one EBITDA of 21.6 million being offset by losses in H2 during lockdown, but with both August and September trading a positive EBITDA. On slide 15, we include the IFRS 16 impact, which I know all of the analysts are extremely excited about. We adopted the modified retrospective method and therefore do not restate the 2019 figures. As you can see from the slide, there's an EBITDA benefit of 15.8 million, when you bring IFRS 16 to 29.8 million for EBITDA. This is more than offset on a profit basis by a 9.3 million pound increase in depreciation and a 7.8 million pound increase in finance costs. And as we note on the slide, the overall net impact is 1.2 million due to our front end loaded leases. No exceptional costs in the year, albeit we could actually say that all of the year was exceptional, given our view that the COVID lockdown cost 60 million in terms of revenue and 26 million on an EBITDA basis. Despite all these challenges and headwinds, we still managed to post a profit after tax of 1.4 million for financial year 2020. On slide 16, we just want to talk through the cash flow and how our controls and decisions impacted it. We worked hard to create liquidity headroom during the closure, and I'll go into more detail on the next slide. But on this slide, we show our cash flow to free cash flow for the year. When the business was closed and as reported our half-year results in June, we managed to reduce our cash burn to only £1.2 million per month. Operating cash flow for the full year was £7 million, with maintenance capex down year on year due to the closure, whilst we saw a working capital benefit, as noted on the slide, due to a mixture of landlord agreements and also some deferred costs, which again I'll talk to on the next slide. We had three new centres and two other revenue-generating investments on site at the start of lockdown 1.0. Our strong returns on invested capital gave us the confidence to continue with these once we were able to, in line with government restrictions. Post all of this, our debt repayments and interest repayments, free cash flow was only a negative 4.2 million. And I just want to echo Steve's comment earlier to thank our shareholders for their support during our equity placing. Along with the free cash flow movement and the equity placing, it led our net debt to 8.7 million for the full year, ending the year with 20.8 million of cash and 29.5 million of gross debt, and a further 11 million of liquidity still available through undrawn RCFs. On slide 17, we just talk through the cash management piece, and the level of government assistance that has been provided has been unprecedented in the form of furlough, and also the business rates holiday. And from this, along with the VAT deferral for March 2020, that means we saw a total of 13.7 million cash benefit in 2020 from the government support, and that's split in the top line of the top table. We also received support from our landlords in the form of rental agreements with 2.1 million pounds of costs completely waived and 4.6 million deferred into the future. And as can be seen from the total of the top table, we received a total cash benefit in FY 2020 of 21.6 million, with only 7.9 million of that deferred, and I'll just provide a bit more detail on that now. Of the deferred amounts, the VAT amount is to be repaid over 11 months from March of 2021, and you can see the split there between 1.2 million in the financial year of 21, and then 0.9 million, which finishes up the VAT repayment. Of the landlord amounts, up to 1.8 million is due in financial year 2021. Now, the reason I say up to 1.8 million is that we're still engaging hard with these landlords to agree waivers, and especially now that the rental moratorium has been extended to March 2021, we believe that we will still get some agreements on these. And then the 2.6 million of landlord deferrals that relates to amounts into FY 2023 and beyond, this all relates to extended leases taken on key sites. Now, all of this, in terms of deferrals, means that there is not a burden in the long term that will stop us in our pursuance of our strategy, which Steve will remind everybody about in a few slides' time. And then finally, it's worth noting that I want to thank the banks as well for their relaxation of covenants, which again are highlighted within the RNS. And that's also helped in terms of supplying us with a loan under the CLBILS scheme of £10 million as an RCF, which, as I mentioned earlier, remains undrawn at the current time. On slide 18, we just look through the balance sheet. Now, that's also distorted by the IFRS 16 adoption, with a right-of-use asset of £140.5 million being offset by £173.8 million lease liability. Absent to this, the other differences really are in trade creditors and trade debtors. Trade debtors is a £4.6 million reduction, £4.6 million of the £6 million reduction is due to prepayments in terms of rents, which now sit within IFRS 16, but also are massively reduced because of the rental agreements that we've managed to agree with landlords. And then the trade creditors is a combination of bonus accruals, property rates, and also the IFRS 16 adoption further. The financial outlook for 2021, I mean, there's still continued uncertainty with the changes to the tier system, and we'll hear more about it this week as well. We'll continue to monitor this and utilise our database and CRM system to communicate with our customers, which will be absolutely key in terms of updating them on what are closures and what's opening. With all centres benefiting from lane dividers, as Steve spoke about earlier, we've now got increased capacity available. And also from a cost side, we do see a slight upside in FY 2021 from the recent National Minimum Wage and National Living Wage announcement, although I do believe that that will be negated in terms of a catch-up in FY 2022 and FY 2023. For the outlook in terms of we look to return to our investment programme as capital and cash flow permits, total forecasted capex for FY 2021 is £10 million, and that's on the assumption of 5 to 7 refurbishments. We will continue, however, to manage capital based on trading. Of that £10 million, discretionary capex is £6 million, and therefore we'll be monitoring that closely to ensure that we're investing in the right things at the right time. We will be having detailed discussions with our banks in Q2 to review the facility, which is due for renewal in September of 2022, thanks to the extension that was provided earlier. But those discussions will kick off very, very soon indeed, and we'll update the market as and when they conclude.
Thanks, Lawrence. So turning to our growth opportunities, on slide 21, we just set out our growth strategy for those of you who aren't familiar with it. And, you know, whilst we've clearly had to make some changes to the short-term focus and certainly the pace of execution, particularly around the deployment of capital, the fundamentals remain unchanged. And despite the pandemic, we continue to improve our business through the execution of this, this very well proven strategy. So looking at how our ancillary incomes areas of food, drink and movements have performed on slide 22, we did have to make some significant changes to our menus to ensure that we weren't holding large amounts of fresh produce, given the constantly changing restrictions of sites opening and closing and the different types of restrictions around what people were able to order. And whilst these changes did reduce choice, they actually significantly improved the speed and consistency of our offer. We initially put the improved customer feedback down to just a general acceptance, really, of customers coming back in a more restricted environment. But the simple offer with reduced pricing served quickly is actually a model that our customers are thanking us for and does offer us some real upside to margin growth and operational efficiencies in a PC or post-COVID environment. Post-lockdown was also a really good time to introduce some new concepts and accelerate emerging trends like contactless payment and in-app ordering. We launched the mobile ordering app powered by Zonal, as seen in, you know, the likes of Witherspoons, etc., a few days after the lockdown finished. And we've seen some really encouraging results and added a more convenient and safe method of transaction for both our team and our customers. We were pleased to see the amusement spend remain consistent, certainly given the centre visitor capacity constraints. And that was helped in no small part by having all of our change machines accepting contactless cards. More and more of our pool tables also accept contactless card payments. But what was really reassuring to see was customers behaved in very much the same way as they did pre-COVID. Their spending patterns, their demand, and engagement for our product were consistent. And that gives us real confidence that customer behavior, when they can, returns very quickly to normal. looking at slide 23, we just talk about the technical excellence and further innovation, and we continued the planned rollout of Pins on Strings and the Pins on Strings initiative during the centre closure periods, where we could and when we could get the contractors back on site. So we've installed them in seven centres, which included the new centre in York over the year. And we've now got 31% of the estate, so 18 centres, that benefit from this technology. And that means that we've still got plenty of runway left, and with a guaranteed payback of at least 30%, and when I say at least 30%, we don't assume any uplift in lane utilisation in our calculations. That 30% is just the team member savings and reductions in maintenance spend that we see when we install them. Installing these machines gives us a really sensible place to deploy capital if the macro environment post-COVID isn't supporting the bigger refurbishment spend. The new TBPA and BTBA, which is the sporting governing body regulations, have actually approved the technology now for all competitions and leagues, meaning that we will look to roll out the Pins on Strings concept to all of our estate. We do plan to install the machines in 6 to 8 centres during the course of FY21, caveated with, as Lawrence mentioned earlier, available capital. The rollout of the new scoring systems also continues at pace. That enables us to join up the digital customer journey and modernise the experience. And again, we continued the rollout of those during the lockdown period. We've now got 72% of the estate live, with the remainder that will be completed by the end of this calendar year. During lockdown one, we actually took the opportunity to upgrade the fabric of our core system infrastructure to build in more resilience and create a platform that we hope will cope with the extra capacity we've got the ambition to add over the next few years. We also invested in the digital marketing team, bringing in new experience and skill sets to keep pace with the ever-changing e-commerce environment. You know, just as an example, we saw online revenue go from an average of 37% of our bowling revenue pre-COVID to over 75% of our revenue during the post-lockdown peak trading period. And with other digital trends also accelerated over lockdown, we wanted to make sure that we were really well positioned to capitalise on the opportunities that this presents. We've showcased a number of these new initiatives in our new openings and refurbishments that Lawrence will touch on a little bit later on. On slide 24, we just talk a little bit about team. Core to our strategy is the attraction and retention of top talent. It was therefore a real key focus for us to recognise the need to support our teams, both financially as well as mentally, through the lockdown periods. We supplemented the salaries of our teams during the lockdown. We also ran additional training to keep engagement really high during the lockdown period, as well as making sure that when we were allowed to reopen, we were going to hit the ground running from day one. The lockdown presented many people with difficulties, and we, as a response, further increased our focus on well-being. We recruited a trained mental health first aider into the business to provide proactive support to our teams. We also upskilled all of our centre managers to support them to take care of their own well-being and that of their teams, as well as introducing well-being sections into our top talent programmes and the monthly and annual reviews that we continue to conduct with our teams. We also kept our reward and recognition very much alive, just switching the focus of what we were rewarding more for around community involvement, volunteering and community engagement. And it was great to be able to reward over 1,400 team members. On slide 25, we just look at our CSR initiatives, and you know, we remain fully committed to managing our business in a sustainable manner, very mindful of the impact that our operations have on the world we all share. And I just want to give you a bit of an overview of a few of the areas that we focused on this year. So our customers and communities need what we offer now more than ever, a safe social experience at an affordable price. So we've been fighting hard to make sure that we're able to continue to offer the affordable inclusive fund post-lockdown, and we've maintained all of the subsidised access for the concessionary groups. In terms of our team members, as I mentioned earlier, we've had a really big well-being focus throughout and after the closure period. We've continued to work with our national charity partnership with Barnardo's, with the fundraising and donations that we committed to pre-lockdown. And the COVID secure measures that I talked through earlier on actually extended above and beyond the legal requirements with our lane dividers and other measures. We've been minimizing the impact on the environment, as best as we can. I mean, what we've seen is it's obviously significant higher levels of waste due to the disposable gloves and masks and everything that people are throwing away. We wanted to make sure we can mitigate the impact of that as best as we can. The second solar installation is going ahead in Bentley Bridge. We've got further centres planned for this calendar year, as well as having a really sustainable approach to the way that we do our refurbishments with construction supplies. And we are actually still on target for 70% of all of our waste to be recycled by the end of 2021.
And then on slide 26, as Steve mentioned earlier, we wanted to make sure we took advantage of the closure period and continued with our capital investment programme as restrictions permitted. And I just want to talk to the three bowling centres that saw this investment during that period. York Bowl is part of the Vanguard Way scheme and opened in the middle of August alongside the new Putt Stars. And you can see a couple of pictures there on the right-hand side of slide 26. After a net capex spend of $1.7 million, it opened. It has 24 lanes, next generation VIP lanes, so you have your own lane, your own ball return, and obviously your own balls, combined bar and diner, and a large amusement area, and it's trading well in its early days. Crawley was a refurbished undertaking for a gross spend of £517,000, and we negotiated earlier in the year for an extended lease on that site. And achieved 12 months of rent-free. We've continued to transform the separate bar and diners into combined areas with encouraging results, and also, and more transformationally for this site, expanded what was already a top 10 amusement area, adding 25% more machines. And then finally, Carlisle was a refurb and a rebrand. You'll recall that we saw strong results from the recent rebrand of AMS for Hollywood in those tertiary locations. And this site looks amazing both internally and externally, a real transformation in the site worthy of the Hollywood Bowl brand. Now, although a smaller data set, the results have been encouraging in these refurbs and rebrands, as well as the new site opening. And we believe that we'll see the same returns we've seen previously in terms of our invested capital. On slide 27, we lay out our current pipeline for future Hollywood Bowls. As you're sure you'll note, some of the dates have slipped slightly due to COVID, and we've only lost one site, and actually that site was due to the into administration and then complete removal of the Nottingham scheme from their development. We've also got a number of other sites that head to term stages, which should add to the pipeline, and we continue to be the tenant of choice for landlords looking for bowls and also now Putt Stars as well. With one site, which is in Colchester, actually completing today. So we can add that to our Putt Stars pipeline now. And I'll pass to Steve, who's going to talk through a bit more detail around the exciting new brand Putt Stars.
Thanks, Florence. So whilst opening a brand new leisure concept during the midst of a global pandemic may on the face of it not seem like the best of ideas, I did want to share with you some of the early trading data, customer feedback and operational learnings from our new mini golf concept, Putt Stars. So on slide 29, we just sort of set out how we've leveraged our leisure expertise. And just as a bit of a recap, we decided to test the new indoor leisure concept as part of our longer-term ambition of growing our business in a sustainable, profitable, and more meaningful way. And whilst we do have a roadmap of new openings for Hollywood Bowl centres, we're mindful that there are only a finite number of new sites that we can open in quality locations that will deliver the levels of profit that we've come to enjoy. We decided to enter the mini golf market following quite an exhaustive review of all indoor leisure concepts in the UK. Mini golf really does share a lot of parallels with bowling. It's an all-inclusive activity that appeals to a very wide demographic. It's family-focused at its heart, and it's a very well-understood product that has a low ticket price. It's got high operational gearing, and when done correctly, has multiple levers for growth. The market's also very fragmented. There's only one operator with any real scale, and that gives us the opportunity to disrupt the model, leveraging our indoor leisure expertise and create some real differentiation in this marketplace. The offer that we've created really is unique. Each centre has 27 different holes that were designed from scratch. And that was to deliver the delicate balance of fun, playability, as well as surprise and delight on every hole. We also built a new scoring system that replaces the pencils and score sheet, giving us the ability to add digitized gamification. We considered using the RFID chips in the balls that would enable us to keep the score for you, but that doesn't allow cheating, and cheating is actually quite an important part of playing mini golf, certainly in our family anyway. It helps level the playing field and gives us the ability to then use the scores for instant end-of-round celebration in our post-visit CRM and the relationship building through the digital customer journey that we have with our customers. We were looking forward to the analyst and investor day that we'd got planned in York, where we could really showcase the new Hollywood as well as the Putt Stars, but clearly that's had to be put on hold. So we have sent out a video which just gives a bit of a clip of the Putt Stars in York to give you a bit of an experience of the quality that's on offer. Turning to slide 30, all three centres have opened very positively, and despite the pandemic, over the time that they have been allowed to open, have actually traded in line with the pre-COVID business plan that we put out. The graph on the slide shows the average spend per game compared against the Hollywood Bowl average spend per game. What we're seeing is, on average, customers, when they come bowling, bowl 1.2 games during their visit as an average. The average golfer, however, is actually playing 1.9 games, or nearly two rounds of golf. So whilst there is opportunity for us to drive food and drink spend, the actual amusement spend per person is broadly in line with that we'd see from the Hollywood Bowl. So there really are lots of parallels between these two businesses, as we hoped. The pro forma returns of the new centre are therefore pretty similar to bowling, especially when we exclude the landlord contributions and test it on a gross capex basis. The test group of those three centres are on track to deliver a 20% return on investment. And we believe that figure is only going to improve with the economies of scale as we get more and more of these centres open and help bring the fit-out costs down. We've been analysing the early customer feedback really closely to ensure that we've got the pricing, proposition and operational processes right for the demographic that we've aimed at. And the early feedback so far has been fantastic. So a couple of really obvious questions that I'll try and answer, one being, what do you think the opportunity of Putt Stars is? Well, we purposefully trialled three very different centres, one co-located with a Hollywood Bowl, and then the other two on retail leisure parks that were anchored with cinema. And with one of those two, that had a compromised configuration that was operating over two floors. The early learnings from the trial have helped us identify 30 locations across the UK. Now, we already have four at heads of terms and one now signed, as Lawrence mentioned earlier. And our property partners are working really hard to secure us the right pitches in the other of those locations, which leads to the next question, which is, how quickly will we open more? And I'd just like to say, as is the case with the Hollywood Bowl centres, we won't compromise on quality just to get scale. We're hoping to open on average 2 to 3 new centres a year. We do have the bandwidth and the available capacity to go faster if the property opportunities are there and the macro market is supportive of it. So looking at slide 32, in summary, we do have a fantastic business that remains in great shape despite the challenges that we have had to deal with over the course of the last 7 or 8 months. We've worked really hard to maintain the engagement of our teams, who are really well positioned to hit the ground running in those locations that are still yet to reopen, as they're in Tier 3. We have and will continue to respond to all the other market challenges that will be thrown our way over the next few months before we turn to some level of normality. We do have a proven growth strategy that's still as relevant as it was pre-COVID, and with a product that has historically proven to be very well insulated from a recession due to our all-inclusive, family-focused offering, we're well positioned to bounce back quickly and take full advantage of any opportunities that may present themselves.